I love tefillah, okay? But I struggle with tefillah, just like everybody else, right? It doesn't matter how old you are, what, if you're rabbi or not rabbi, everybody struggles with tefillah. Don't kid yourself. And dafka, because I struggled with tefillah a lot, I decided, well, I could either waste the next hour of my morning in chakras, so I could learn to actually understand it and make it meaningful. So when I was in high school, I like pounded every book I could on davening, and it helped me gain both philosophical understanding of tefillah and also each word of tefillah. And it's something I still need to constantly do, because it otherwise it dries up. So I'm excited about this class just really to make it fun for me to daven. But I've been exposed to a lot of different books on tefillah, thank God. And the idea is that I'll show you guys. I brought in, somebody's actually bought just for TVA, my Maestro money, like this guy.
Oh, I have that book, yeah.
It's really nice. The idea is that you guys will be looking through these books, some are in English, some are in Hebrew, so whatever, in order to find a commentary that find the thing that's powerful to us and that's meaningful for us. Does that sound good? That makes sense? So again, I'm just laying out the possibility. A is I just prepare a source sheet, we go over the source sheet, vizel. Possibility B is we make our own source sheet, meaning we take the sitter and together as a group ask questions and then search together for answers. And I was hoping that we can make a Google Doc and every week have, you know, somebody or all of us write, you know, on each our thoughts and insights into the sitter in that Google Doc.
I like that.
What do you guys think? A or B?
B.
B.
Yeah, right,
you like B?
Yeah.
Alan, you understand the two options that I put forward?
Sure, it does not.
You're open to anything. Okay, awesome. With that said, it would be great if at least for maybe 10, 15 minutes of class, maybe the beginning or the end, I think maybe the end of class. I actually am working this over the summer. My main project is working on writing a book on davening. And it's basically done. And it's like a first draft. So I have it printed out. And maybe we go through each week, you know, a little bit of this sitter. This sitter is basically called the Shlomo sitter, where I've gone through many of the works of Shlomo Carlbach and take in out of it pieces that relate to davening. And I'm hoping to like make it a pamphlet and I'm editing it, but you guys can tell me what's powerful and what's not, and that can also be a good forum to discuss like some of the philosophy of davening, stuff like that. I mean, you can actually help me in writing this book.
That's awesome.
So maybe like the end of the class, last 10, 15 minutes, we can read a passage or two and do that. I'm probably trying to squeeze too much into one little class. So if you guys are interested, we could also take time during one of those chabura slots in the afternoons to work on our sitter project. I mean, it doesn't have to be just...
I was going
to
learn about tefillah during chabura time anyways, so...
Excellent. So you'll see in the schedule, there's like a Tuesday afternoon, it says chaburas, which means whatever the guys want. So you could be in the base and we can work independently or come together to work on whatever tefillah we are working on today.
Cool.
Is that good? Makes sense, guys? Okay. So let's get started. So the only thing, you're going to need two things to this class. You need to bring a sitter, okay? And you need to bring a pen and paper or a computer. I give you a chance to bring a computer if you want.
Would you recommend?
Maybe one of us to just be the Google Docs guy.
Oh,
to like, you know, to take something that's powerful for us. And so I thought today I could give a general introduction to tefillah. Maybe another day we'll do that, but I want to just get straight into it. Let's just take a tefillah that maybe we've said our whole lives, or maybe wasn't so powerful, and let's make it powerful ourselves. Sound good? Awesome. Okay. I have a pen. Does anyone else need pen and papers?
Yeah.
Okay, let me get pens and papers for you all, and just for today, I'll lend it to you, and ultimately, if you guys can get your own notebooks and pens, that's cool. But today, that's good. That works too. You need to be...
I'm
you sure? You don't want to be there? For me, it helps to write it down, but it's not everyone's the same. Fine. So, you know what? I'll just also borrow from you today, and then when I get myself organized, we'll each have our own sitter with our insights. Okay. So the first tefillah that a Jew says when he wakes up in the morning is?
Modani.
Modani. So I thought, what a great way to start. Modani.
Okay.
Okay. So, let's read through it. Moda ani lefanecha. And the goal here is to ask questions about things we don't understand, and also just be looking for the meaning behind what this is trying to, what are the values that this tefillah is trying to inculcate within us? What is this trying to teach us? Okay? Moda ani lefanecha. What does that mean?
I thank you, living the eternal king.
Okay. I thank you, living an eternal king. Interesting. If I wanted to say, I thank you, how would I say it in Hebrew?
Toda.
Or, ani mode. But it doesn't say that. What does it say? What does mode ani mean?
I'm thankful.
I am thankful. Okay? So already there, there's a little bit of a, I guess, question you could ask. Is if I want to say I'm thankful, I want to say toda, why are we saying mode ani? You hear the question?
Thankful am I.
Okay, so question number one I would write is, why thankful am I? Okay? That's the question. Any suggestions? God willing, we'll look through this far and we'll try to see if they have any answers, but what do you guys think? Why would the text start out kind of speaking so strangely in this weird language? Moda ani.
Sorry.
It's all good. Don't worry about it. Why start off thankful I am? What's the difference between saying I am thankful versus thankful am I?
The emphasis is on the thankful opposed to the on the you.
Okay, so Elon says emphasis on thank you. Okay, we could also just write it and then type it up later if that works better. Emphasis on thank you. What else? What other ideas? What's the difference? I mean, I like that. It's good. It's good. Why start off? What's the difference saying thankful am I versus I am thank you? John, thankful am I for you being here in class today versus I am thankful.
You sound weirder when you say
that. That's true. What's the difference between saying ani modeh, I'm thankful, versus modeh ani? Sorry?
The first.
Thankful and I sounds more sincere, more like meaningful. You could just say like, I thank you. When you say the words thankful and I, it's something really flow up your tongue, which means that you really gotta think about what you said.
Interesting, because that's gonna go out of our way.
It's
to
like saying to someone else, like, I love you, or I am in love with you.
Uh-huh. And it's not just I am right now, but it's a continuous state of being, yeah. Says John. I'm gonna be the secretary for today. So John's saying it's his state of being, which is more meaningful. I like it.
Maybe it's the first thing you say is thanks.
Awesome. So now, Elon, and whatever you like, your comment, that's going to be your topic to like research. So if you're excited. So Elon's saying, I kind of a separate point, which is I guess more relating to the question of why is this the first thing that we say in the morning? But there's a lot of things you can start off our morning with. So, why start off with Moda Ani? So it says, but I think we learned Tefillah. We learned different mitzvah today. Right? Why start off with Moda? So what does Elon say?
The first word you say in the morning is thank you.
Oh, first word in morning is thankfulness. Awesome. And how does that, what does that do for us?
Sets a good mindset.
Sets the tone for the day that we should be embracing thankful, gratitude. Thankfulness is like a very fundamental idea of being a Jew. Yeah? Sounds good?
Yeah.
In fact, what the idea that you're saying is connected to the essence of what being Jewish means. How do I know that? That being Jewish is linked very strongly with gratitude. I should have brought a marker, but... Yehudi. What word does that remind you of?
Toda.
Exactly. Toda, thankfulness. A Jew, by its very definition, is someone who's grateful. Is someone who represents gratitude. Is that always the case in reality? No. But is that what we're meant to be doing? Our mission, one of our missions as being a Jew, a Yehudi, is to be someone who represents gratefulness. People should walk down the streets and be like, yo, that Allen kid, he's just always grateful. He like just says thank you to everything, you know? And like we kind of lose it because we say brachas, but we forget what it's all about. But I think Judaism, a big part of Judaism, is about imbuing ourselves with this sense of gratitude as the essence of who we are. Okay? Awesome. So so we'll write that down as Elon's Kiddush. Thankfulness is our essence. We're starting off our... That was really Elon Yonatan combo. So we start off with gratitude. And if you have a chance to look up some sources which relate to that and find that, that would be awesome as when we go into Chavruta time. Okay, great. So Moda Ani, maybe getting back to our original question, actually, now that we're saying that we start off our day with gratitude, maybe when we're saying Moda Ani, you could say it means I am gratitude. My essence is gratitude. Meaning, that's what a Jew is. Not Ani Moda, I happen to be thanking. But like John was saying, the essence of who I am is someone who's grateful. Make sense?
Yeah.
Sounds good. Okay, awesome. So that's all based on the John Elon, I don't know. Awesome. Essence equals gratitude. And that, my friends, is already awesome. A great way to start off our day. If we actually thought about that and like thought how I'd live my life differently if every day I actually said Moda Ani and actually realized that my day is gratitude, I would live very differently. Right? The message of the whole idea of this tefillah class, I think, besides making the words meaningful, is that we should be different by the end of our davenings. It's not just about God, but it's about changing ourselves, so we got to find a way to make every word and somehow apply it to our lives. Awesome. Moda Ani. Okay. Lifanecha. What does that mean?
In front of you.
In front of you. In front of who?
God.
Awesome. Any questions so far? Any questions about this? There don't have to be questions, but the best way to learn is always to be searching for questions. So how do we... any questions on the word Moda Ani Lefanecha? Let me ask it this way. If the sitter would have said Moda Ani Melechai V'Kayam, thank you, great king, awesome king, would we be missing anything? What is having that word Lefanecha? Awesome. So I'm going to write again another John didn't say. Rabbi. So he says intimacy. Yeah? That lifanecha indicates that we are close to Hashem. We're standing before God. We're in His presence, which is really the whole idea of halacha and tefillah, to remind ourselves that I'm constantly in the presence of God. It keeps coming up, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe that's why the sitter has this word, lifanecha. Sounds good? Awesome. Okay. Melech chai v'kayam. What does that mean? Did I say it? Oh.
Living in eternal kingdom.
I'll hold on. Wait, yeah. Amen. All right. What does melech chai v'kayam mean? Living in eternal kingdom. Ask me a question. That's how it's going to work.
How can you be living in?
How can you be living in what?
Eternal.
How can you be, I mean, not how can you, but like, what's the difference between living, or during, you're saying living implies death, or, I'm trying to understand your question.
Like, you can't, like,
As in life implies death, but eternal implies...
I never thought that before. Does life imply death?
Often.
I'm not sure if it always implies death, in this context, but it could be. But I might ask it differently. What does Melech Chai V'Kayam add? Why is it necessary for us to theologically add this phrase in? What does Melech add to the picture, and what does Chai V'Kayam add to the picture? What do you guys think? Let's start with Melech. What does Melech, what does saying that God is a Melech do for us?
Close to God.
Awesome.
And then you're kind of stepping back a little bit.
Well, are we talking in second person or third person? Moda ani lefanecha, which means melech avigayim. First, we start off in first person, like talking directly to God, and then we take a step back to describe God. Like you said, it's kind of like a bracha, where we have this interesting relationship of, like, on the one hand, we want to feel close to God, and on the other hand, what? We need that distance, that respect, and we kind of describe God. So that's actually awesome insight. You want to write that down? Write that down. That's what I mean. I didn't even think of that, but that's great. We have this, the two sides of the coin. And aligned with that idea, what is melech? When you say that God is the king, what do you feel? Do you feel like lovey-dovey with God, or like what do you, you know, what's your emotion when you say the word melech?
Melech is like command the presence.
Authority. Command the presence. Like, he's the king. He's here. You're here. Right? Like, there's got to be respect. So, on the one hand, we have this lifanecha, and the other hand, we have this melech avikayam. He's the king. Yeah? The dual aspects. By the way, a bracha is not valid unless you say melech. That's what the Gemara says. So, John's definitely on the ball, pointing out this, what's the word I'm looking for? The dualness of this search of both closeness and, yet at the same time, respecting God. He's not your buddy. Like, you do have to listen to him, even when you don't feel like it. But at the same time, you want to be close to him. This back and forth that we're feeling. Okay. Chai v'kayam. This is a little bit tricky. What does it mean, chai v'kayam?
Alive and
existent or eternal. What is alive and what is? Let's start each one word at a time. What does chai mean?
Well, as you can circle that back to,
I don't know. What does it mean for God to be alive? You remember the big in the 60s, God is dead, like that whole thing. What do we mean when we say God is alive? God's not dead.
He's accessible.
Okay, interesting. God says accessible. Alan, what do you think? What does it mean to say that God is alive? Not what do you feel, just what does it mean?
It means physically alive.
What do you mean by physically alive?
That he's, I guess, accessible is the best word to put it.
Okay, so you second Elon. Mm-hmm. John, what do you think? What does it mean to be chai?
Active.
What do you mean by active?
Involved.
He watches over his. He's alive in our life. He's. I would say there's two ways of looking at it. One, you could say that God is watching over us, shkacha pratit, and the other way is that he's a part of my life. It matters. It's not just, oh, there's a God out there. A lot of people, you know, say, I believe in God. How does that affect your life on a daily basis? Not at all. I just believe in God. Right? That's not the alive that the sitter is trying to preach, trying to teach. But that the sitter wants is this chai. It makes a difference in my life that there's a God. It's not just a theoretical concept out there. Okay? And beyond that, it's alive in the sense that John was saying that, like, he actually affects my life. He's actually there for me. Like, I personally feel that and experience that many times. I have to share some stories if you guys are interested. But I think that's one of the ideas of chai. And what does kayam mean? Here's a toughie. What does kayam mean?
It means that he is accessible. He's actually available. He's in the world.
That's good. I like that. Kayam. Available. He's like the mekayam means a mitzvah, to fulfill a mitzvah. It's real.
Out and about.
Sorry?
Out and about.
Out and about. You write that down. Write that down, put it on the Google sheet. Awesome. Okay. Let's keep going. Shechazarta bi nishmati. What does that mean?
That I've returned to my soul?
Not that I have returned to my soul, but rather
returned to me.
That he returned to me my soul. What is this talk that you're talking about?
reference to when every day when you go to sleep, God takes it away. When you come back, he gives it back.
Awesome. Alan knows his Talmud. The Gemara teaches there's an idea out there that every night a part of your soul leaves 1/60th of your soul, and in the morning it returns to you, which is also part of the reason why we wash our hands, symbolize this rebirth process that happens every morning, right? So to remind us of this idea, we're saying Shechazarta bi nishmati, that he returns to us our soul. Okay? Yeah? So that's the reference. But what does that mean? What does it mean that God, what does the Gemara mean when it says that God returns to us our soul? You see, guys, or no, you see? You feel?
Good.
You happy? Okay, good. What does it mean that God returns to us our soul? What is that supposed to teach us? What does that do for us?
That he is extremely powerful.
Okay, he's powerful, that's true. But in this context,
it's us realizing it's going back to the thank you part.
What are we thanking God for? At the end of the day, what are we thanking him for? That he... Okay, we're thanking him that he gave us life. In other words, what's this feel all about, if you ask me?
Thank you.
Thanks for being alive. Mm-hmm. In other words, life is a gift. Don't take it for granted. I have a soul. I didn't have to wake up this morning. We all assume that we're going to wake up the next morning because we did it yesterday and the day before. But really, the sitter is trying to teach us, don't take things for granted. Just because you woke up doesn't mean it's not a gift. It is a gift. Your eyes are a gift. Your ears are a gift. We just get used to it. But the sitter is trying to re-put that passion, that excitement, that I'm alive. Okay? Make sense? But it's interesting. It's not just that our body, because it could have said Shechazarta bi. But it says Shechazarta bi nishmati. What does it mean, Shechazarta bi nishmati?
My
soul. What's the difference between saying God returned to me my body versus God returned to me my soul? Why is it putting such a stress on the soul?
Because Judaism is all about the soul, about like over the physical, spiritual over physical.
Awesome. By the way, guys, don't think none of this is planned out. I don't come in with a script. I'm just reading it and asking every question possible, and whatever, and the answers you are coming up with happen to be all the right answers. It seems like, you know, you're doing great. You're gonna get to many of the right places. You just think actively. So exactly, you guys have a lot of education. So Elon's saying, listen, Judaism, a big part of Judaism is stressing that we're not bodies, we're souls. We are souls with a body. Our souls live on after our bodies are gone. Right? Many Jewish thinkers think our soul will go into other bodies here, reincarnation. Our soul will go to the next world. But the point is that we are souls. We are not bodies. And perhaps this is telling us, it's stressing us, this idea when it's saying, you return me my soul, not my body. Yeah?
Also, our soul is part of God.
That's right. Well, that's a whole different question. That's another great question. What is a soul? Rabbi, you're telling me about a soul, but what's a soul? Right? So that's another great question to do research on. But John hit it on the head that we do have this Hasidic idea that we are a chelik elokim ma'al. Our soul is a piece of God, and that we are actually a part of God. Right? Much longer. We have a shiur just about that, but
yeah, we shiur yesterday about how that's not the case.
But in any case, our time is limited, so we just get the basics down here. We are souls, and just to start thinking about these concepts. Derech Agav, an interesting question you could ask. We're not going to go there. Shechazarta bi nishmati, you return within me my soul, which implies that I'm not a soul. I'm not a body. I'm something else. You return within me a soul. So.
Well, didn't you just say that only that you were left with 1/6 of your soul?
Right, exactly. So you could make the argument, the Kabbalists, and take this very literally, they say that there are five different parts of the soul. So a part of your soul is not with you when you go to sleep, part of your consciousness. But when you wake up, that part of the soul comes back to you. But you still have a part of, there's five different parts of the soul. So, that's if you want to go with a more Kabbalistic understanding of this whole tefillah. Yeah? Okay, let's just finish it up, and then I'm going to release you guys to the hounds to do some research. I'm going to give you some projects. Shechazarta bi nishmati bechemla. Remember, it's not Shechazarta bi nishmati bechemla rabba munatachem. No. Shechazarta bi nishmati bechemla. What does bechemla mean? Mercy. What does stressing this word chemla do for us? How does that help us?
It doesn't have to give us our soul back.
Exactly. Life's a gift. Let's not take it for granted. God created us. You met men and you created a Barbie doll and then you push a button and it turns it alive. You don't have to. You may do that. God doesn't have to keep us alive. He keeps us alive. Right? Because he loves us. But it's a gift at the end of the day. Okay? Finally, the final phrase in this one, we're not going to completely flesh it out. I'm going to give you guys the root of time to flesh this one out. But Rabba Emunatecha. What does Rabba Emunatecha mean?
Great is your faithfulness.
Great is your faithfulness. What does that mean?
That you trust us with the opportunity. Like, you give us opportunity by giving the soul. Like, you have faith in us.
Oh, so somebody's heard a lot of nice explanations already. Very good. So Elon already says that Rabba Emunatecha means that God has faith in us. He trusts that we're going to actualize our potential and be a Tzelem Elokim. God has faith in us. Therefore, he creates us. Awesome. Any other ideas? What does it mean that God, Rabba Emunatecha, God's great Emuna? What does Emuna mean?
Belief.
Yonatan says Emuna means belief. Does Emuna mean belief, guys? What do you guys think?
Yes.
I'm not so sure. I'm gonna give you an assignment to see if that's really true in a biblical sense.
Study.
Steadfast. Interesting. Okay. So that might be an alternative option. So what would we mean in this context if we translated it as steady? So what would we say?
Repeatedly.
Repeated. The great is your repeatedly?
Oh. I mean,
what is Rab? How would we translate Rabba Munita? Okay, so maybe think about it and try to get back to us with an answer. What does Rabba Emunatecha mean? When we say it every day, what's that all about? Okay, awesome. I mean, you guys are doing fantastic. What was the thing that we learned, that you learned?
So I found a story, and it was essentially a scientific study where there was an issue with people going out of bed and just fainting. And so there was this woman, doctor, who got up, essentially... Like, her thesis was that you need that the switch from lying down to standing up was, like, too rapid from waking up. And you have to give at least a long 12-second break between waking up and standing up. Hmm. Like, everyone's like, yeah, you're so amazing, great idea. So then, this Jewish doctor stands up and says, well, actually, the Jews have been doing this for many years, and the Moda Ani actually has 12 words.
If you do, it has 10, no?
There's 12 words. If you give each word a second, then that's your 12 seconds right there.
That's a great story. You guys think that should make it into our book?
Yeah.
That's book worthy. Awesome. Great job, Elon.
Thank you.
You have an insight, John, for us.
Alright, so one time when we see Emuna come up in the Torah is after the Jews crossed the Reed Sea, and they were chased by the Egyptians. It says that they believed in God. And why does it say they believed in God? Because shouldn't they already believe in God after they saw the Ten Commandments?
Guys, hear the question? They already saw the Ten Makot. So why are they only now, after the splitting of the sea, do they believe in God? What, they didn't believe before when he was, like, you know, doing all that crazy magic stuff?
And it's not that they didn't believe that God existed, it was that they didn't believe that God would help them out, because at first they were trapped and the Egyptians were closing in on them, and they got scared and they thought God abandoned them. But now they see that God will save them and he's got their back.
Awesome! That is such a cool insight, and I never thought of that myself. In other words, Emuna means not knowledge of God, but a feeling like God loves you, like he's protecting you. So only after Kriyat Yom Tov, when they saw their enemies dead, they literally feel this closeness to God, this steadfast closeness to God. Awesome. Did you guys learn something that you wanted to share with us?
Yeah, so we researched here, Rabba Minotacha, where does it come from? So we see Rabba Minotacha in Eicha, mm-hmm. when it's talking about all the terrible things that are happening. And then it says... The sentence is Harashim Lav Karim Rabba Minatacha. So we are new in the mornings, Rabba Aminataha. So one way we said we could interpret it is you have all these terrible things happening to you and your soul during the day, and sometimes when it comes to night, everything's just terrible. But when you go to sleep and wake up in the morning, it's like a fresh start, and everything is better again.
Awesome. I actually have a friend, psychotherapist guy, who recommends whenever you're in a bad mood, just say Modani. Say Modani, because it doesn't have to be in the morning. You want to start fresh, say Modani. It's like God's giving you a new start. Awesome. Amazing. Okay, guys. We'll stop here for Modani. Actually, one last idea that I had. It's a little Kabbalistic, so forgive me, but what's the first letter that Modani starts with? Mem. What does Mem represent always? What's the gematria of Mem?
40.
What does 40 always represent in Chumash? And throughout? Rebirth. I'll give you some examples. Noah, how many days was he in the ark being reborn? 40 days. Moshe Rabbeinu, how many days was he on Har Sinai?
40.
How many days is a child in a womb until he's considered alive? A soul goes into him according to the Gemara?
40.
Good guess. How many years was Rabbi Akiva when he started doing tshuva? 40. How many se'ah does a mikvah? That's a measurement. Does it have to be in order to go into for a mikvah to be kosher? 40 se'ah. So this is, I gave you about 10 other examples. Is a general theme in both Chumash and Gemara that 40 represents rebirth. Why is that cool? How does that connect to Modani?
You wake up, it's like a rebirth.
It's like a rebirth. It's a rebirth experience. So like, you can imagine, meditate, I'm at like starting your day fresh, getting out of the mikvah, and having a jump start on our day. Awesome, guys. This has been a fantastic experiment in the class. Do we have 5 minutes to introduce you to the... We do. We have 5 minutes left. I'd love to introduce you.